Welcome to the CC Taxpayers Wake Up Call Show. The Coastal Carolina Taxpayers authors this show, and we're on the air 6 a.m. on Saturday, 11 a.m. on Sunday, and 8 p.m. on Sunday. And also, we're also available on the cctaxpayers.com website after it's been broadcast. I just welcome your coming to listen to us, and I'm Bob Griswold, and I'm going to turn it over to Mary Griswold.
I'm Mary Griswold. Tonight we have kind of an unusual show. We have a group of Gen Z people who are going to talk about their lives. I'm going to ask them where they get their news and get some of their take on some of the events that are going on today. And I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
Hi there, my name is Emily Boyd. I am 20 years old, and I am a pre-service music education major at East Carolina University. In 5 years, I hope to be either pursuing a master's degree or finishing a master's degree and figuring out where I want to teach in this country.
I'm Caitlin, I'm 19, and I'm from the Swansboro-Jacksonville area. I just got my associate's in arts in May. And in 5 years, I plan to be aligning my life with my more leftist, hippie-type ideologies and making ethical decisions as much as possible.
My name is Josh Kaur. I just turned 26. I have a degree in criminal justice from Pensacola Christian College and was elected to the city council right afterwards. Where I see myself in 5 years, I hope to still be in office, maybe a different office at that point, but we'll see.
Hi, my name is Emmanuel Ruiz. I am from here in New Bern, just turned 20 recently. I'm going into my third year at Pensacola Christian College studying political science. I currently serve as president of the Liberty Youth Coalition, as well as director of communications for the Republican National Hispanic Assembly of North Carolina.
Thank you. Now I'm going to go the other way. And I'm going to ask, where do you get most of your news?
I don't think it's uncommon for our folks of our generation to use Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. Those are big three. On those platforms, I'd be mainly looking at Mises Wire and Mises Institute for their research and their headlines there. There's a good news aggregator that does some stuff there that gives you both sides of the spectrum there. Those are the big two that I'd say I really look at.
I tend to look for my news and then get basically customize the recommendations to be sending me the type of news I'm looking for. Predominantly, I tend to go to the articles that I know I would disagree with, and I tend to read those perspectives more than I read the perspectives I agree with. That's just tend to be how I do it.
Now, Josh, let me ask you something as an office holder. As a city councilman or whatever the exact title is, where do you get your information on the issues that concern your city?
It's a lot more difficult at a smaller city because obviously we don't have our own independent journalism and all mm-hmm. that happening, but there's a lot of chatter on social medias and stuff, and I just have an overabundance of people texting me, emailing me, calling me 24 hours a day about every issue under the sun, and I do my dead level best to get back to them, all that stuff.
Okay. Is there a local paper in Havelock?
It's kind of complicated, but not really one that's like Havelock Central, if you can.
Okay, because I know you have the County Compass.
Right.
And there's, you're still in Craven County, so the Carteret News isn't going to do you any good.
No, and there's like the Sun Journal, but, you know, that's mm-hmm. hit or miss. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Caitlin?
I just want to say that I really respect the fact that you intentionally look at the opposite side because of the people that you're kind of like advocating for. There's a whole bunch of different types of people in the city, and they're going to have those types of perspectives. So I really respect that. I was so focused on what he was saying.
Where do you get most of your news?
Oh, okay. So school stuff for sure is really helpful, like learning stuff in my classes, and it kind of opens my eyes to what's really going on. And then assignments, whenever I was doing assignments consistently that were more free range, I would take the chance to look into things that I felt passionately about. So obviously for those assignments, we have to have like reliable resources. So I would be like checking the quality of the resources. So I would say that it's pretty reliable. And then if I'm on social media, because like we all said that social media is very
it's
helpful,
inevitable, yeah.
Right? I try to check and look at what multiple people are saying on that social media, and then Googling like what evidential support do these concepts have.
Just like Caitlin and our friend said, a lot of the news that I do see comes off of social media, but I don't particularly stay most up to date with the news, just because there's a lot going on in my life all the time, and I'm just, you know, trying to keep on top of the everyday kind of busyness of my life. So it's pretty hard to stay consistently up to date. And I mean, with social media too, it's really hit or miss with the credibility of a lot of news. And I don't like reading articles and reading news sources that I don't 100% trust, because I don't want to skew my point of view or give myself any kind of false ideas or just, you know, have some incorrect knowledge in my my sources.
Okay. Caitlin, you wanted to say something?
I think to properly be able to keep up with modern issues and modern concepts without, like, this is to add to your statement, of course, without overburdening yourself, is just teaching yourself about like broader social issues, systemic social issues, and the way that they impact all sorts of individuals. So that way you're just at least more socially aware without it being like consistently depressing. Yeah, overwhelming.
Now I'm gonna say, okay, 58 years ago when I was your age, okay, I didn't give a darn about the daily news, really. It was, where are we going to go this week? Where are we going to do this night tonight? Whatever else. And I just have to say thank you for those that are saying you're...
And also, when you're in school, you don't have a lot of spare time. And Josh, you're serving on a city board. I'm assuming you also have a job.
Yes.
So
it's a lot to balance at times.
Yes, I would assume so.
Manuel?
What I was going to say is, I think one of the big differences between our generation and those before us is how easily accessible it was to get news.
That's
right. Because beforehand, we had, what, two or three big news broadcasters, then we had eight, then 12, and it grew. So now we have all these new cable channels, and now we have all this competing alternative media in the podcast space, in the YouTube space, Rumble, all these new platforms coming out every other weekend. It feels like there's a new...
It gets shoved at you whether or not you want to.
And it becomes a commodity. It's something that, you know, businesses are very good at. They create commodities for us to buy. So we've now started using news as something we can buy and consume rather than just informing ourselves.
One of the things that I've noticed, of course, with the 24-hour news cycle is every half hour you get minutia broadcast over and over and over and over. Going back to the days of printed newspaper, yes, you saw it in the newspaper, maybe on page 2 or page 3, but now you hear the exact same thing every half hour.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that was mentioned after 9/11 was that because of the way the news was done, there were little kids who were home watching TV who watched that building fall 10 times. I mean, a little kid does not necessarily understand that you're looking at the same event. They think, oh my, this is all over the place. And
if anything, it seems like that's a very good argument for not giving your kids TV. Like, get your kids away from your screens, please.
That's how it was when I was, 9/11 is actually my very first memory. And it literally, I remember being dragged away from the TV and watching this tower fall and going, what is happening? And no one would explain it because I'm like, what, like 3-4 years old or something like that? I mean, I was little. And
yeah, so, can I actually touch on that? I think you're the only one who was born before 9/11. So all of us have only known a world
after
9/11, after the war in Iraq, after the Bush administration. I would assume most of us would have been getting our political know-it-all in the Trump years. I think you're the only one who got it during the Obama years. Yeah. So we're in a very different used kind of
How do you think that impacts you?
It's Trump. Like, he fundamentally changes politics.
My generation that I'm in is technically called a transitional generation because we're the one generation that remembers what the millennials had, and we're also in touch with what Gen Z has. So it's really odd for me because I can everything that they're about to explain to you, I can totally relate to. But I could also relate to the millennials as well because I'm stuck right in between there as we generally shifted the entire generation over.
Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm a military child, so I've grown up almost my entire life. My dad was in the military, and after 9/11, what I remember are the impacts that it had on what my father had to go do. He actually deployed quite a few times while I was young. At one point, even he was gone for 13 months. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that being a military kid didn't impact me, but having to have my father away from me and just have such an unstable, moving around all the time kind of life, it was really challenging.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's foreign policy, as we see, it's going to have effect on not just people around the globe, but around in our own homes.
Yeah. Now, when we come back, Emily, I want to get back to you on that, and I want to take a totally different tack on it. So I'm going to tease what we're coming back to.
And you're breaking up 15 seconds early, yes.
I know.
Folks, thank you for staying with us. We ask you to frequent our sponsors and supporters. Just tell them how much you enjoy the show. Tell them how much you're willing to help participate with them. We're going to take the break right now.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Welcome back. Thank you for staying with us. Mary, I'm going to go to you.
Emily, you talked about being growing up as a military kid, and Gen Z has not known a time of peace other than the years there was peace a couple of years while Trump was president, but we really haven't known. He didn't start any new wars. We have not known peace since 9/11. And growing up as a military kid, you talked about being moved and having your father away. Now, having your father away is hard. I won't go after that one. But being moved around every 3 or 4 years taught you to land on your feet and to reinvent yourself and to thrive in an unfamiliar environment. And the other thing I want to mention about that is you're a Marine Corps child.
Hoorah.
The Marine Corps is such that you run into friends that you said goodbye to 4 or 5 years ago. And I think that makes a difference, too. But I think, again, it's not the easy life that many Gen Zs have had. But there are skills that I think you learn in that life that are very important.
If I had to take away any skills that I have developed from my years of being a military child, it is the inability to feel stable anywhere. I don't think I've ever lived somewhere and I felt like it's really my home, because I don't really have a home because I've been everywhere. I mean, I was born in Jacksonville, but I moved 4 months after I was born to New Orleans, and then a few years later back to Jacksonville, then, you know, California, back to New Bern, and then to Swansboro. So I've felt more instability than anything else. Mm-hmm. And I feel like now it impacts my ability to really not necessarily adjust to new places, but it has definitely made me feel like an outsider in a lot of places where these friends that I make have grown up with each other their entire lives.
Mm-hmm. I think you've really diagnosed a lot of the problems that Gen Z has had, specifically when it comes to the effects of foreign policy that's had on us. You don't have a home. You don't have somewhere to say, this is my tribe, this is my group, this is my people. I come from a bicultural place. I come from radically Hispanic and radically American and not really fitting into either category. So I understand that feeling of not fully being one or the other, not fully being of any one group. And if anything, I think you're going to see something that you're going to have general agreement left and right in Gen Z is being anti-war, mm-hmm. being anti-expansionist, absolutely. Being anti-neoliberal. This Bush-era foreign policy of going in and setting up new democracies, this failed strategy. We're very much against that, mm-hmm. left or right. I think you saw Ron Paul doing it from the right. You've seen Noam Chomsky from the left. These people who said, no, it's enough. Let's bring our home, boys home. Your dad, I believe, was in the Marines Corps.
Absolutely, yeah.
When it would have been better for him to be stationed locally and stayed at home. I think no matter where we are on gender roles or whatever you want to call it, having both a mom and a dad at home helping out is a better place to be than having a single mom or a single dad, having two people there to share the load.
Absolutely.
By having someone across the ocean in Iraq, Afghanistan, Thailand, or wherever it may mm-hmm. be, you end up pulling a strain on the family because now mom has to take it up. Now dad has to, it's bringing it back home.
I guess, is it appropriate to ask how you guys feel about war in general? Do you guys think it's necessary? Do you think how do you feel about the use of resources, that type of stuff?
I would love to chime in on that. I mean, I believe that we need to defend, I'm very much like Monroe Doctrine type scenario, defend our hemisphere, leave the rest of the world alone. Like, do we need to be involved in Ukraine? No, we don't. Do we need to be involved in Iraq and Afghanistan and all the other countries? The answer is no. I mean, we need to protect ourselves, obviously, but we've got this. We've got the largest military in the world. The second largest military in the world is 7 times smaller than us. We are the only country that is completely locked in by water on both sides in such a manner that if you were to try to attack the United States, we could practically take on the entire world with our military. Mm-hmm. So it's not necessary for us to constantly be out everywhere fighting everybody, because we can defend ourselves. If national security is our goal, then I think from a conservative standpoint, we'd say, yeah, we would like to be out of wars.
Can I interrupt for 1 second?
Yeah.
One of the traits that of war should be we have an end goal.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We're not there to socialize with everybody. We need to have an end. If we're going to war, first off, it needs to be declared by the Senate, not by every major financial involvement, you know, what they call the industrial military complex. It should not be the ones declaring war.
I just want to ask a question as a boomer to my Gen Z friends. What would you have done with Hitler?
Just go around the table?
That's a loaded question. So as you know, Mary Griswold, we have
family members were in the camps,
unfortunately.
I know.
That is a really loaded question. Come back to me.
I was literally just talking about this 2 days ago. Like, I rarely talk about that stuff, but it just came up in a conversation. I don't think I would go back in time and kill Hitler, but...
Would you get involved in the war? That's the question. Would you get involved in the war? Do you want to chew on that?
Well, involved in the war, like...
Against Hitler.
If you're the United States, would you go after Hitler?
Would you come? I mean, England was getting ready
to fall. For human rights, yes, absolutely, I would.
Okay.
I think it comes down to a national security question. Like, Lend-Lease directly led into the United States' involvement. If we had not supplied our allies in Europe, we would not have gotten involved. So if we had just kept ourselves out and actually been isolationist, we would have kept out of that war. The only reason Japan attacked us is because of that Lend-Lease. So I think ultimately if it were me, I would have maintained a much more isolationist.
But did we have an obligation, knowing what was going on with the concentration camps, to get involved?
So I think a better question is, when should we have gotten involved? I think my answer ideally would be we shouldn't have gotten involved in World War I. Because had the U.S. not gotten involved in that first war, Hitler never gets the chance to come to power.
That's true. That's the Treaty of Versailles.
The question is, what happens to France? You have all these alternate history questions you can have. But focusing on that, now let's say, hey, World War I happened, the U.S. gets involved, Treaty of Versailles, all these other stuff happens. Hitler's now in power. We're going to start the time set at 1939. He just invaded Poland. Do we have the right to step in? No. We're not involved at that point. Should we do something to start doing something? Yes, there's a legitimate cause for us to start thinking, hey, do we need to start putting sanctions and other stuff like this? But it needs to be something done very carefully. Because at that point, U.S. media doesn't have proof of these camps. We didn't have proof of the camps in the Soviet Union at that point. The question now at that point is this. Once we have sufficient proof of camps in Nazi Germany, we take them out, so on and so forth. Do we do the same thing in the Soviet Union? Do we do the same thing to Mao's China and risk nuclear war? At which point do we put our own national security over that of someone else? And I think the U.S. government has a responsibility first to its own citizens, protecting its own citizens first, and then doing what it can to help out other citizens around the
world.
Very
good point.
Human rights, as we like to say, is not something that should be prioritized above national security. It is a conservative effort to maintain our borders. And the reason why we do that is not because we want to keep people out. Immigration is an amazing thing. We need to have immigration. The immigrants built the skyscrapers. And my family, a couple generations back, immigrated to this country. So my point is the reason why we have a federal government to begin with is for the protection of our country. And so for us to go out there and be the world police and come in and say, well, you guys are violating all these human rights and all this stuff, it's not that we as conservatives do not care about those people. We absolutely do care. But it is not the responsibility of a federal government to go out and take care of those things. Because a federal government that has the ability to act in that way to other countries can do so here. And we have to be careful about how strong we allow that federal government to be.
You had some.
I think that the security, the homeland security aspect of it definitely brings up a good, thoughtful point for sure, just to make sure that everybody in the U.S. is safe before using resources that we might not have or we might not have an abundance of on other countries. But to not prioritize or consider human rights in our decisions as a country or as a government, it's just unethical.
I would agree. I think human rights. We should absolutely consider human rights as a thing, but the thing is, what is the final cutoff? Do we go to war with the Soviet Union and nuke all of Europe, all of the US, and all of Russia and China potentially for the sake of the camps? That's the question. At what's the risk assessment? And I'm not saying there's one definitive answer. It's a very hard question.
Yeah. And that's a very valid point, because when it came to World War II, we were all against Hitler. We were all against the camps. But yet, Russia killed more people than Hitler did. China killed more people than
Russia
did.
We're talking 10 to 20 times more people
Way
than
more.
The Germans
And
did.
So the United States just rolled over and played dead. So we're okay to be the arbiter in one sense, but we're not okay. Who made us God? Who made us the police?
You know, you look at, Emily, I'm just going to take one moment. And, of course, you look at the United States mistakes also, like with the Japanese internment camps and whatever else. Now, again, we've all made lots of mistakes.
Guiltless. It has a lot
Emily,
of
I'm going to go.
I think it's a really slippery slope here. There's, on one side, as you said, we have our national security to think about. But on the other, we have human ethics. And it's just, in a situation like this, it's really hard to decide whether or not it's the right time. And there's so many factors that it depends on, like, if you go in too early before you have proof, like you said, like, you know, then you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And then people start coming after you. And I just think that this is a very...
It should be a difficult thing to say, because this is human lives.
If I may, we have a current situation happening right now. Let's take North Korea. I mean, why not go in there right now? And there's a bunch of people in there that are living under poverty, and they're getting killed and all this stuff. It's happening right now. Why don't we go in there? Well, because the moment we go in there, not only is we're going to lose American lives and all this stuff, but they're going to completely gas all of South Korea, if not nuke it. And so it's this balancing act. But the truth is like, I see why we want to go in. But ultimately, remember, every single time we get involved, no matter where it is, we're always going to end up putting American lives on the line.
And I think there was a German legal theorist and foreign policy expert who talked about this, who said you have to do this very carefully and do a very careful balancing act.
Folks, we've gone a little bit over time, and I appreciate it that you're listening and we didn't interrupt the discussion. And we're going to take another break and ask you to just hear from our sponsors.
Transmission and Automotive Repairs, the Transmission Physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military. Just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back, folks, and I'm going to turn it back over to Mary again.
And I'm going to go around the table. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about voting. Are you registered to vote? Have you already voted? And what are the sources that you look for news on how to vote? And I'm going to start with you, Manny.
All right. Have I registered? Yes, I am registered to vote. I did that very quickly after moving back into North Carolina. I got that squared away once I got my license. So that was registered, got that done. I've done voter drives before, so I've already helped other people register to vote. So I'd say I'm fairly active on that front. I voted before. I'm proud to say my first vote was for our dear Mayor Odom, helping in his campaign. So I had the pleasure of casting my first ever ballot for that gentleman. As for research, prior to this local election when I really got involved, I researched Congress and above. Anyone below, I couldn't find anything, so I just said, nah, they have this letter next to their name. It works for me. And when it came to the city council election, I said, meeny, meeny, miny, mo, who looks prettier? This guy. All right.
Okay.
Simple as that.
Yes, I have registered to vote. I've run a campaign and had a lot of other people register to vote. Have I voted? I mean, it's not an election year, but yes, I've voted every single time for too many years now. As to my sources, I have a lot of friends in politics, and I have run in a lot of political circles. So the truth is I have an advantage in that a lot of times if I ask around, I can usually just meet the candidate. It's not necessarily at the presidential or Senate or U.S. House level, but those guys usually there's enough information about. But at the local level, if you ask around, and what I would say is as a local candidate, if you don't know your candidate, go on to the Board of Elections. You can find their phone number and give them a call, because I'm not kidding when I say most of your local candidates will pick up the phone and they will gladly talk to you. And in an entire election cycle, I think I got like one phone call. It's ridiculous how many people come out to vote and they have no idea who to vote. And the first time they're meeting you is at the polling booth.
I'm registered to vote, but I just turned 19 in June, so I was only able to vote in the last midterms last year. I didn't really get to do a whole lot of research. I got like one of the newspaper things, but it just kind of had like simple lists of traits or policies that they wanted to enforce, so I kind of did it based off of that, which ended up mostly being Democrat, because the way that I think about it is like I really don't have that much trust in the government to put like force behind our votes. Now, I will vote because I believe that I'd rather take the chance that it does matter than not putting in effort if it does matter, if that makes sense. But yeah, I like to choose the lesser of two evils at the very least until I can see someone that, is really, that shows evidence that they're going to put effort forth. And yeah, typically Democrat.
Yes, I am registered to vote. I pre-registered when I got my license. I have never voted though. Unfortunately, I turned 18 right at the end of my senior year. And by that point, most major elections had passed. And as I was leaving the area, it was just not possible for me to vote in any kind of local elections. Being at college and being so unbelievably busy with my major in music education is it means that I don't really have a lot of free time to really catch up on anything that is happening in the real world, you know? So I don't really have a lot of knowledge on the kind of elections that happen.
Now, I am going to mention, just to go with what you said, Emily is a music education major. She also plays bass drum in the ECU marching band, which is rather time consuming.
Oh yeah.
So
just a little bit.
You got a busy schedule.
Yeah, and I'm actually currently teaching a band camp at New Bern High School. I'm
That's
working
awesome.
With their front ensemble, so I've been doing pretty much 10-hour days for the last 2 weeks.
I do think it is important to emphasize that when people are like, "Oh, well, I don't have enough time to vote and all that." I don't look at that and say, "Hey, that's not the way our system is," because I'm sure you've heard 1,000 times, well, you're supposed to vote. It's your duty to do that, da, 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 da. But here's the thing. You should be voting. I'm not going to say you shouldn't. But it is understandable because we have a representative republic. In other words, we don't go out to the city hall every time and vote on every single thing. We elect other people to do so. So what is good is to at least get involved in that process, because when you... as you go along, eventually you will encounter the government in some part of your life, and they're going to do something to tick you off. And you're going to be like, "Hey, I really wish they wouldn't do that." Then you're going to wish you have control over the people that actually make those decisions, and that's where voting comes in.
Trust me, I want to be more involved in the political happenings of our world, just because I find myself... I don't know if I really associate with any kind of political group, but I am a social activist. I like to enact social change. I like when there are people in elected positions that want to help socially reform our country, because that is one of the many things that I think is wrong with our government right now, is that our government doesn't feel like it's for the people. And I really wish that I could be there to help inform those decisions on the people that are in charge of us more.
So if I could toss you a question, if it's not for the people, and I think I agree with you here, but I want to see how much we agree, then who is it for?
It's for the people that can pay the big tax dollars and, unfortunately, that are bribing elected officials underneath the table.
And that's some place that is somewhere where conservatives and liberals can agree on, is that we too often, we come at the approach and we solve the problem completely different ways. But we agree that there is a problem. And this is underlying the biggest thing when it comes to politics, is instead of coming to the table and saying, "Okay, you have your solution, how can we come to a compromise on this that will actually be good for everybody?" Instead, everybody right now in America is yelling at each other and just saying, "Hey, you're wrong, and I agree that there's a problem, but we gotta fix it. And we need to move past that."
Yes.
You know, I want to interject, and again, from the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association perspective, we want everybody to get involved in the political process. And first off, I want you to call your representative, your senator, your mayor, your council members. Tell them when you support them as well as when you disagree with them. You need to let them know both sides of that argument. And when you do that, you actually represent hundreds and hundreds of people that are unwilling to pick up the phone or to stop by and visit.
I just want to mention one thing about what you just talked about, Emily. I think it's a symptom of a problem when you, first of all, look at the percentage of millionaires in Congress versus the percentage of millionaires in the general population, and then you look at the fact that most of these millionaires in Congress were middle class when they entered Congress. And at that point, you raise some questions. What are we doing in our political system that is allowing that to happen? And as they become millionaires, who do they represent?
Well, considering over 90% of the money that is in America is held by less than 10% of the population, I'd say we've got a pretty big problem on our hands.
Well, that's typical of any organization. Any organizational structure, you will have 90% of the work being done by 10% of the people.
But it's not 90% of the work, it's 90% of the wealth.
However.
Yeah. I know, but what I'm saying is people get rewarded based on risk and based on
that's a long effort. That's a long-standing thing because that is called Pareto's Law. Again, 90% of your problems are really caused by 10% of your people, and et cetera.
And that applies across the board. I think we need to be careful and not condemn wealth achieved by effort. I have no problem condemning wealth achieved dishonestly. But there are I can think of a number of very wealthy people who have earned their wealth and given away and formed charities and been socially conscious.
That we can agree on.
That, you know, I don't look at wealth as an evil thing, and I don't think we need to look at wealth as an evil thing. People have different levels of effort and different levels of ability and different, you know, there is something called luck, you know.
Yeah.
But these billionaires are not they're not making any money based off luck. They're not making money based off the fruits of their own labor, because people like Mark Zuckerberg and the owner of Amazon and the owner of these multi-billion, like hundreds of billion dollars for their companies, they're making it by exploiting people. There's no way, what was the calculation? I think if you made like $1,000 for 500 or 5,000 years, you still wouldn't have as much money as a billionaire or, you know, whatever. Mm. It's just a unreasonably massive number, and you are not capable of making that without making unethical decisions and exploiting people's labor. And that's like, I don't know.
I think I'm going to have to completely agree with you. And I think they've actually used the government. So one of the big things that you see, I can get into this more detail later on, is how money works. 50% of all money that's been created was created in the last 2 years. So we've just seen all this money come out of nowhere because we just printed it. We've seen since 1970, workers used to be paid equal to their amount of work. That's gone now. Why? Because we've got rid of the gold standard. We got rid of the power of unions through a lot of other things. We had means by which workers were able to get just the amount of compensation, just like billionaires did. And we had a better system. But things happened in the 70s, which we can get into later, that really broke the system.
Well, folks, I'm going to break in again and we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, thank you for staying with us. Again, this is the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Wake Up Call Show.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back from the break, and here we go into the war zone. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we were just talking about the question of billionaires and is their wealth legitimate? I think a lot of modern billionaires, their wealth, though legal, was not properly obtained. Yes, there's a difference between legality and morality. So ideally, yes, this system would not be as it is, but legally it's how it works. We can talk about how we can change that legally. I think there are three basic things that we need to understand. One, the elimination of the gold standard by Richard Nixon, a Republican, mind you, his elimination of that system destroyed money because now it's just a fantasy concept and not a true concept. It used to be based on this dollar is equal to this amount of gold and we had a solid measure of exchange. Now it's whatever we want it to be. So we can change it to print more money for more guns, for more ammo, for more stuff like this.
That's
so since
modern,
we got rid of...
That's the root of modern monetary theory.
Yes, right. Of course. Okay. So the gold standard, if we return to that, you're going to see a contraction in the amount of money, which means there's going to be fewer dollars going around, which means billionaires are going to have less money. One, okay? Mm-hmm. Two, companies are basically the government at this point.
Pretty much.
Why? Because the government calls up the company and says, hey, buddy, can you do this? We saw that during COVID, during 2020 with the social media blackouts and all the rest. Hey, buddy, can you work on this and make sure you do this? Wink, wink. That's something called very similar to fascism in Benito Mussolini's Italy, where he had his cronies govern the companies. Were they directly owned by the government? No, but he had power over them through his cronies. So breaking the connection between business and government would be crucial. And how would we do that? I think there's a very good answer, which is reforming unions.
Correct.
Modern day unions are awful because they don't focus on, hey, how do we help average blue collar people? Talk to a normal blue collar person. They're not going to be your average Democrat. They're not your average Republican. They care about having food on the table, a car in the driveway, and being able to send their kids to school in a good place. Unions don't care about that. Most unions nowadays are focused on pushing a certain agenda, one, or two, they're focused on centralization of power in the boss, having the boss of the union have more power. So instead of changing it, instead of having that current union model, we shift over to a worker-based model where the workers have a lot more say in these sort of things. We're seeing that right now with UPS, with the strikes that are possibly going on. Workers have a say in these type of matters. So one, we can have a cooperative capitalist system where we say capitalism has some inherent goods, it has a lot of goods, but has a lot of excesses. The best way of getting rid of that, those excesses, is not through government, mm-hmm. It's not through regulation, it's not through these things, but it's through normal people saying we've had enough, let's team up, let's form a network, and we'll help each other out. That's a system called mutual aid that's been floated around in all circles.
And I think that's fundamentally one of the biggest difference between conservatives and liberals is conservative ideology says, okay, we see this problem, let's fix this problem, but not let the government be the fix. Liberals are like, okay, how can the government help fix this problem? The government caused the problem. It's time to stop looking at the government for the solutions. The government is not our friends here. The corporations are not our friends here. We, the people, are the ones that should be deciding it.
So a really great way of starting that is, one, churches. Let's have churches become more active in their communities by reaching out. Let's go back to church. Modern secularization has broken us apart and individualized us. We've made us far too individualistic because now it's me with my custom-made TV, with my custom-made this, custom-made that. Instead of feeling, like you said, you don't have a tribe. We don't have a group of people. If we were able to... A church is a great way, having somewhere where you worship together that gives you a sense of collective identity and says, hey, we're together in this shared struggle and we're able to work together.
I really do like that idea. I was raised in the church for a very long time. And I don't really know where I feel now in my religious journey, but right now what I feel is my upset at churches and unfortunately large groups of Christian people alienating, hating, and refusing to listen to or understand anyone that lives their lives even a little bit different than they do. I am pansexual. I have identified as a member of the LGBTQ community for a very long time now, and as someone who is a part of this community, it is incredibly difficult for me to see how mean and how just...
Let me butt here and veer quickly because I think we're in the agreement on this. I've been through a very similar journey through my faith and all the rest like you did, and I am still a very devout Christian. You can ask... my friend over here, how we get into theological debates all the time. But on behalf of all Christians, yeah, we're pretty awful a lot of times. Mm-hmm. A lot of us haven't been doing what Christ wanted to do. Should we stay to our standards and stick to the Bible? Absolutely, yes. We're not going to change that. But yes, there has been abuse. There have been things that need to get changed. And I see a lot of young people who are still in the faith, especially this new Reform movement, this new Catholic movement, this new Lutheran movement, who are saying, yeah, there are problems. Let's fix the abuse, stay true to the message, stay true to the gospel. But yes, there needs to be change.
And the message is to love thy neighbor, right? Love thy neighbor as you love thyself.
And yes, and I think that's going to get into a larger debate that I would love to have with you.
Yeah.
On air or off air into that very object. But yes, that's an important part, but also reigning truth in love, love in truth, having two...
That I think this whole conversation about Christianity not only depends on the version of the Bible that you're reading, but like what type of Christian overall that you're raised around and influenced by. And then also I think we need to remember that the separation between church and state is very necessary in American society. Because I, as a spiritual individual, Christianity has never resonated with me. Some guy in the sky never resonated with me. Some guy named Jesus, although he might be a cool individual, he might have been a real person, but I'm not going to shape my whole life and my whole values based off what he said or his actions in his life, because as a part of my human experience, I'm supposed to have these experiences and have these lessons and have these feelings that I'm feeling. Everything that I experience, whether it's sex with a woman, marriage with a woman, changing my gender, having an abortion, I think that it is just it has existed since the beginning of human, true human consciousness. We have had necessary situations where we need these things or where these things naturally occur. And for Christianity to condemn them, and then to further that, for Christianity to be the only way that we come together as a community, it seems just not right to me. And then to add one more quick point to that, and to find that community, in the connection and find that home for people out, it would be much more beneficial if we just focused on the community aspect of it and not just the church, because as loving as a church can be and as spiritual experience and spiritual connection within any group of religious peoples is so beneficial, but so is having a community of people of variety, and then just the overall support system. It decreases so many social problems within a area or community to have a sense of support within a variety of people.
So first off, let me say, I am a Christian and I do profess that Jesus Christ is Lord.
Amen.
And there also is irrefutable proof that Jesus was a person that lived on earth and did die on a cross. There is irrefutable evidence of that. But setting that aside, you mentioned two things and I want to hit on both of them. First off, separation of church and state. When the founders set up our system, their concept was we need to create a set of government that can govern this country, and we need a set of government that can govern the states. Most of the founders were state political leaders. In other words, they came out of the General Assemblies of Virginia and North Carolina and all these other states. Their philosophy was, we do not want the federal government involved in religion. So as far as that goes, we agree on that. but they did not say that they did not want the government involved in religion. They didn't want the federal government involved. The state governments, most of them actually were significantly involved in religious things. And that was debated back and forth. You had some of them that said, no, they shouldn't be, and some of them that said they should. But the separation of church and state is intended to act as a one-way door. In other words, if I, as a Christian, go into government, I should be able to allow my Christianity to affect the way that I decide on things. That just as you, if you were elected into a position, would allow your non-Christianity to decide on things. It would affect us both ways. So we can affect the government because we, the people, have the power. But the government should not be able to affect your Christianity. The other thing is you talk about, oh, I don't want church to be the only way of solving these, you know, like be able to create a community. The point is we gather as people. We're naturally social creatures. We gather around sports. We gather around politics. We gather around Christianity. We gather around every last thing. The problem in America over the last several years has been that we are no longer defining ourselves by what we agree on. Like, hey, we agree on this thing, and we're for Go Green sports team, you know, whatever the case. We don't gather on those things. We instead gather on the things that we disagree on. And that's what is tearing our society apart. So the point being made is we need to instill civil society because our government is wholly inadequate to govern itself without civil society, those things where we can conglomerate together and actually work together.
We can easily have civil society even if we're, as an alternate to religion and Christianity, we are brought up on ethics and ethical systems, because at the very least, I genuinely understand that there is fact behind the behind Christianity and behind the Bible. I had a philosophy instructor that was a Christian, and he was probably one of the smartest men I've ever met. So I do believe that there is justifiable reason for being a Christian as an individual. Just a quick comment. To impose any aspect of your life upon someone else just because you feel like it's right is not ethical.
And I would say that you, someone who says a secular worldview must be imposed on a Christian, would be doing the same thing, but in the reverse. There will always be a defining morality that defines the laws. The question is, whose morality, who defines it, and how does it work?
Okay.
Logic.
We're going to have to stop it here. We promise we will do one more program in a couple of weeks, and we'll probably pick it up where we left off. And thank you very much, all of you, for being part of this and
appreciate
for being
this.
Blunt and for being honest and being respectful to each other. I really appreciate all of you. You did an awesome job.
Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Hey folks, here's a tip. When you think firearms and ammo, think East 70 Palm. They've been on Highway 70 east of New Bern across from the fairgrounds for 31 years. Drew Preston and his staff know firearms. Gun sales have tripled in under a year, and women shooters are the fastest growing part of their business. Their great inventory, over 300 guns in stock, changes daily. And if you want something they don't have, they'll look for it. New and used, rifles, shotguns, and pistols. Buy, sell, or trade. And they also have many holsters, scopes, and other gun accessories. Every member of the staff is deeply knowledgeable, and every one of them is an excellent shooter. So don't just come for the inventory. Come for the thoughtful advice. E70 Palm, your home for firearms, ammo, and answers. Highway 70 East, New Bern, across from the fairgrounds.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.